The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. The more you know about our meat, the better. That's the bottom line at Whole Foods Market. Our standards require no added hormones and no antibiotics, ever. Our partnerships with farmers and ranchers allow us to offer the highest quality local and organic choices. And our newest program, the Global Animal Partnership's 5-Step Animal Welfare Rating, sets unprecedented standards in the industry for beef, pork, and chicken. Standards you can see, labeled, when you walk into our stores. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more information on the 5-Step Rating, because hey, the more you know, the better.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today in the studio, we have one of the most fascinating bartenders I've met to date, Nick Jarrett of Dram, Clover Club, doing some spots over at The Drink with Frank Cisnero sometimes as well, as many other bars around the country and the world. Welcome to the show, Nick Jarrett.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
Good to have you. So on that subject, and I know it's something that you've talked about at different bars and different seminars, multi-city bartending. Now, you were down at the Franklin in Philly, and you were basically going back and forth between New York City and Philly for over
2 years.
Yeah,
2 years, yeah.
I kind of have this this image of you. It's an image of you being this kind of like gypsy troubadour, like bartender guy, like basically sleeping on the bus or the train, like back and forth. And, like, not necessarily even having, like, a home. It's, like, this kind of, like, romantic idea I have of you. Like, basically working, like, 7 shifts a week, if not more. And just catching your sleep on the transport.
That's really not far from the money. I mean, it's sort of how it worked for probably a good 6-7 months.
How did you... was this something that you had planned on doing? Or something you just ended up doing because it was... out of necessity, or how did that even happen?
You know, it was actually something that I had always planned on doing. I mean, I moved out here from Seattle mm-hmm. in 2000 to go to school in the suburbs of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I moved out was because you have sort of a tighter network of cities on the in the Northeast. Like, I moved into Philadelphia with the idea that I could go back and forth between two cities pretty easily. And it took a few years to get off the ground in bartending, but... I met bike messengers pretty early on in Philadelphia, circa maybe 2002, who had apartments in both cities and just moved back and forth.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's such a crazy idea to I don't know, to me anyway. I always like to kind of keep grounded at one place and
sure.
just like really make a home there. And for you, I kind of liken it to being like a band on tour.
Hell yeah. I mean, it's very similar. And what happened was I was running a bar in Philadelphia called Apothecary. Mm-hmm. We opened Apothecary, I think, early 2008, and was head bartender down there, beverage manager, basically there nonstop, and ended up picking up one shift a week at Tanya Guffey and Frank Cisneros' bar at the time, which was a counter in the East Village.
That was the all-organic
That was bar, the right? all-organic, like, mm-hmm. green bar, a little restaurant bar. Cool spot. Ended up meeting those kids at Tails, and then within 2 weeks, just picking up a day a week at their spot in the East Village. And it was basically an outlet to avoid getting burnt out on the one bar.
Yeah.
And then that sort of picked up into the sort of thing where, you know, I've started doing one day a week up here over the course of 2 years, began working only one day a week in Philadelphia. And now pretty much bartend at a number of spots. I'm also at Flatiron Lounge right now.
Right.
Moving around on a couple of projects. And for a couple of years, yeah, I was more or less an itinerant bartender. I slept a lot on Chinatown buses, and I know the banquettes at my bars very well.
Now, Apothecary, when you were there in Philly, you were working with Tad Carducci?
Yeah, right? Tad Carducci and Paul Tanguy, the Tippling right. Brothers, set it up. Mm-hmm. Hell of a spot. It was the first real, like... sort of up to specs modern cocktail bar in the city of Philadelphia. First one to run a cold draft rig.
Right.
A lot of those critical elements. Interesting concept. It just recently shuttered, actually, and they changed it into another concept. But, yeah, it was nuts. That was a crazy, crazy bar.
I really like that back wall behind the bar stools with all signatures and graffiti on it. It's really
cool. The way that happened was the folks who designed that bar were into architecture and design. And they just
can tell. It's very modern.
Very sleek. Yeah. But they had that giant, cold, white brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And my staff hated it. And I and Tad were having a little shift meeting one night. And we just said, you know what? Fuck it. Like, grab Sharpies, mark the thing up.
Nice.
We figured either that would be a very effective sort of resignation letter, or else they'd just have to get on board with it. But that wall was beautiful. Yeah, we had everyone in Philadelphia contribute something.
So that was at the very end of the apothecary run.
That was fairly early.
I thought you said resignation letter.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, sometimes you just got to go
sometimes
out.
Sometimes you quit right as you start.
Sometimes you got to go out on a limb. You make the place right, and it was a hell of a bar. Definitely ran the town for a solid year.
Yeah. I remember being down there with you, I guess it was about a year and a half ago on a USBG trip.
Right, right. Yeah, totally.
We went down to the Philadelphia Distilling Company. It's the Philadelphia Distilling Company.
Philadelphia Distilling Co., yeah.
Yeah. That makes Blue Coat Gin and Vucare Absinthe. We went down there, and Tad Cardici was behind the bar, as well as a number of other hooligans slinging drinks. It was a big geeky industry night, and
we tore Philly up that night.
We crushed it.
Philly kind of tore me up that night, actually.
Well,
it was known to do that.
Me too. We'll talk about that later.
no lies.
That could be a whole other show. So also that night, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We went to Tequila's,
is a hell of a spot. Dave Suro's spot, yeah. With Siembra Azul Tequila.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
Beautiful restaurant. 25 years old and running, I think, now.
Yeah.
Like a machine. And then we popped by the Franklin.
Yeah. Now, that's what I wanted to get to, actually. It was the Franklin Mortgage Company.
Franklin Mortgage and Investment Company.
Right. That is pretty much, that's like the premier cocktail bar in Philly at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of pretty good new contenders on the scene, but the Franklin is running strong. I mean, for my money, and I've been around the country, but I think it's one of the top handful of bars in the country.
And you worked there as well.
I opened that bar up. Alex Day and Joaquin Simo and Dave Kaplan with Proprietors LLC, Death & Company sort of consulting branch, came down and did the initial concept on that bar for Mike Welsh and the folks at Ruby D, who operate the joint. So I started up there with a couple of people when we opened in, I guess it would have been June of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And that rolled out hard. Alex did a hell of a job designing that bar. We ran with Cold Draft there, Scotsman, full block ice program.
Mm-hmm.
Places like a pocket knife. Easiest bar I've ever worked behind.
Cool.
Like, it's nuts.
So you've got... You've got Alex Day, you've got Joaquin, Dave Kaplan behind all of this. So really that whole, like, Death & Co., like New York, East Coast, dark stirred and bitter, you know, that vibe going into this kind of underground bar in Philly.
Sure.
Bringing it back to something that probably was thriving back in the day.
Oh,
like
totally.
That style of bar. Did you... At the time, did you realize, I guess, that that company has been like kind of branching out now? You know, Alex Day being out in L.A. working on
Death & Company L.A.
Death & Company
or later,
L.A.
Yeah.
Did you realize that bar at the time was going to get the kind of press that it has received? And like, it's generally heralded in the press as being one of the top cocktail bars in
The trick
only
with
US,
bars that consultancies go in on an open. Is that they sort of stand or fall on the strength of really the people who get hired to work there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can come in as a bar consultant and set up a hell of a bar, but you have to have passionate people there, and they're the ones who, when you leave and move on to another project, really drive it. And what happened to the Franklin was between Al Sotak, Colin Shern, all the other folks who started up there, like, we just had a rock star team of bartenders.
Right.
Like, everyone was super passionate, and it started in very much a Death & Company mold, but the drinks formulation has changed to something really sort of completely different at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very interesting program that those guys are running down there. Very proud to have worked at that bar.
So, something that always got me, like when I was consulting for bars and then left after, you know, the 3 or 6 month contract ran up, is, you know, you have this ownership over what you've created. And then when you leave, you still worry about it. It's like your kid going off to college.
Of course.
And you can't watch him all the time. Do you have any feelings like that on any of the places, like maybe like the Franklin or like any places that you opened or consulted for?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you worry a little bit? I mean,
I don't worry about them so much, just because certainly at least in the case of the Franklin, like, I mean, I know that crew down there is incredibly solid.
Yeah.
Like I said, some of the best bartenders I've ever worked with man the stake of that bar. Other spots, you know, like, take Apothecary, for example. Like, we had a solid core of good people there. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, more and more people moved away from it. Right. And, you know, everyone who was there did their best to hold the program together. But some programs make it and some programs don't. I mean, a year or two is a long time in the bar world. And the problem is that new bars are opening up all the time. So new bars, bartenders tend to be sort of itinerant by nature. Mm-hmm. They move from one spot to another. You have to be good at retaining the talent that you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we'll keep the talent going when we get back from this quick break. My guest today is Nick Jarrett, and we're going to take a quick minute and be back, and we'll talk more about multiple city bartending, and we'll get back into this bottle of Fernet.
Oh, yeah?
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Sunday at 4:30 p.m., tune in to Burning Down the House. Architecture is the laser focus of Burning Down the House, a weekly discourse on all things built, destroyed, admired, and despised. Each week, Curtis B. Wayne, your host, invites a posse of authors, critics, builders, designers, and other architecture fiends to reflect on various topics related to perhaps the most functional of all art forms. Again, that's every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And we are back.
Damn straight.
I always like saying that. And we're back with Nick Jarrett, bartender extraordinaire. We were just talking before the break about multiple city bartending. Nowadays you are... I know we were just talking before the show about... some of the other cities that you've been to recently,
sure.
do some guest bartending. Now, you were just in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yep, which just got back yesterday.
Typically, you know, North Carolina isn't some. It's not like, you know, like a mecca of cocktails in most people's mind. And in fact, a lot of a recent guest of the show, Brad Farron, who is from North Carolina. He Philly, and then North Carolina, now sure. New York. And your coworker at Clover Club, we were talking a lot about like the music scene and about how it's really thriving. It's kind of in a way that like Nashville is like the recording capital and Austin is like the live music capital. You've got North Carolina being like the independent music kind of mecca of the United States.
Yeah, I was shocked when I was down there. I mean, I had never been to North Carolina before or Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool town.
Yeah.
Just the people down there were awesome. You know, everyone was passionate, interested. The music scene seemed amazing.
And so on that note, you two went down together, actually. You were guest bartending at a couple of places, and not cocktail bars. You were at a couple of like rock and roll kind of divey bar.
Yeah, one rock and roll joint, although they have a little cocktail list, Neptune's Lounge, which is in the King's sort of music venue. Mm-hmm. And then Ashley Christensen was kind enough to let us use out her restaurant pools to do an event. Basically, what we're doing is we're traveling around to take over bars across the country, actually going on really what is, you could say, more or less a bar tour. Trying to raise money for a project we're doing, which is going to be building green mobile bars and doing a proof of concept at Burning Man in 2012. But the fun thing about that is, in order to raise the capital that we need to build the prototype, we are just going to basically be running around the country, taking over bars and working under different circumstances. It's amazing. You can make a cocktail anywhere.
That's true. We were talking about that earlier as well, right before the show. It's amazing to take. I kind of liken it sometimes to certain styles, like cafe racer motorcycles, in a way. Like just stripping everything down, and it's all utilitarian and it's fast. You know, it's. You were talking earlier about what did you call it? Five bottle badass.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It, which is a concept. Brad and I were just down there, and we're running a limited menu, offering some sort of classically minded cocktails in the style that we do at Clover Club. Ran with the Martinez, improved whiskey cocktail, Clover Club, a few of the standbys. So basically just brought down, had purchased for us 4 bottles of liquor, a couple bottles of vermouth. And we realized very quickly that just given the tools that we had on hand, we could deviate massively from our menu and basically offer a bartender's choice, classically minded program. You know, I mean, anyone will look good in a top-end designer suit, but you can make anything look good if you pull it off right and you know what you're doing.
Right.
Cocktails are the same way. I mean, yeah, like a top-end motorcycle goes fast, but you can build something out that will also go pretty fucking fast.
Yeah.
And that was cool. I mean, like, you're working in a city, like, a lot of cocktails have sort of been caught up in the mentality that you have to have all these high-end tools. You need Cold Draft to have a cocktail program. You need Scotsman. You should have block ice. You need crystal mixing glasses. We have these things, and we love these things.
But it's not necessarily known to the rest of the world.
No, absolutely not.
We get involved deeply, and I know, like, we'll talk about this later in the show, too.
Sure.
I always tell people when I talk about you that you have this encyclopedic knowledge of cocktails and history of spirits.
I keep trying to drink it away, but, you know, it just doesn't
it
go.
It won't go. Now, you have, like, all these amazing tools and all of the spirits behind you, like, every day. Well, every night, rather.
Well, depending on the day.
Yeah. That's true. And having all these things, it's really great to make these obscure cocktails. You know, like having things like Creme de Violette and Allspice Dram, things like that. But what I really like about this idea of yours, like this of yours and Brad's, you know, taking this five bottle badass thing. I guess what I'm really trying to say is, you were down in Raleigh, North Carolina, making classic cocktails for people. These are these classic cocktails like the Brown Derby and the Martinez and the improved whiskey cocktail.
Yeah.
To us, they're kind of like old standbys. And they are old standbys in the general.
I mean, they're classics. Most of those cocktails are pushing 100 at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And
if
when you're
not
talking about
150.
That, but it's really easy,
but
again, for
most
those
people
of us,
don't know that.
Yeah, and it's so easy for those of us in the high end of this business to forget that these are classics that have stood the test of time, and they've done it for a reason.
Yeah.
They're forgiving.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it on shell ice. You can mix them up in a fucking mason jar. Like, you can work with these things. People have been making these cocktails. They have been so thoroughly vetted and tested.
Yeah.
Over the past 100, 150 years. And they're delicious. Like, when you're taking somebody in a town that doesn't maybe have such a great cocktail, like, culture, and you want to serve them a drink, like, we geek out, and it's cool to geek out, but you got to remember that everybody starts somewhere.
It's also amazing, like, it's not just the recipes, it's the technique as well.
Absolutely.
That I can't tell you, like, I was just out in San Francisco last week, and I worked at some really great places, Beretta and Della Rosa, doing some guest bartending, but, like, a lot of people don't realize things that are so fundamentally, like, ingrained in our brains,
sure.
like stirring a drink as opposed to shaking it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like shaking a martini or a Manhattan. Like it blows our minds when you actually stir it.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, like, yeah, that's part of the fun of working in guest shifts, because at bars like this, you know, again, you are working on the worst grade of ice. Known to man. I mean, I've worked with some ice where I'm like, wow, I've never seen ice this bad.
Yeah.
At both of our locations, which shaking wise, you know, you're going to reach an equilibrium. Like after 15 seconds, more or less, you're going to reach an equilibrium no matter what kind of ice.
Temperature and dilution.
You're shaking on. So, you know what? Do your thing. There's like the first couple of seconds are going to be wildly different depending on the ice.
Right.
But after 15, it all levels out.
Yeah.
Stirring was a challenge. Because when you're stirring on wet, thin shell ice, like, it's more like a roll back and forth. And when you're thinking about what kind of ice they were working on today, they used to work on shaved ice.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bartenders would work on shaved ice, which is basically the shell ice of the day.
Yeah.
Cheap bars would save money by just scraping off levels of the ice and then working on that.
With like a Gilchrist shaver or something like that.
This is what people were drinking. Like, and you can make it work. But it is about the technique, and you do need to be mindful of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an easy thing to show people because it's actually common sense stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of this stuff, when you show someone the technique and you explain it to them, it just makes sense.
Yeah, it's absolute common sense, but it just takes a lot of time someone showing that to you. Like,
sure.
One of my favorite, and this also coming from my my trip last week to San Francisco, there's David Wondrich has a drink, and this is going back to like classics being like very forgiving.
Sure.
There's the hotel room old fashioned. Are you familiar with this one?
I have an idea. Are. I think so, but go ahead. Remind me anyway.
Well, okay. Classically, you know, an old fashioned being, you know, your whiskey, your sugar, your water, and your bitters.
Sure.
So he has this amazing drink, and I've told quite a few people about it. Just Linnell Smothers is actually the one who turned me on to it, but after she did, it was kind of actually one of those common sense moments.
Absolutely.
Where you basically, you take a 50 ml bottle from the mini bar in your hotel room. You go to your like bathroom area where you have like your glasses and your like coffee machine with your sugar packets.
You always get the two complimentary glasses
and
coffee machine with sugar.
And they're
packets.
Usually pretty awesome little rocks glasses if you're in a good place. You get your 50 ml bottle of whiskey from the mini bar in the hotel room. You get a sugar packet from the coffee accoutrement. You get your water from the sink. And if you're a bartender that's worth your shit, you always travel with your own bitters anyway.
Always, always have your own.
So there you have your hotel room old fashioned.
Sure, you can do it New Orleans style. Where there's a little bar down there, the Circle Bar.
Mm-hmm.
You might be familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
Great little spot. Beautiful building on Lee Circle. And that's where I saw the concept of Cajun Crystal introduced.
Oh, yeah.
In New Orleans, of course, you can take beverages to go anywhere as long as they're in plastic.
Totally. Yeah. So, that shocked me the first time I was there.
Oh, absolutely.
Little Dixie cup dispenser like right by the front door of the building.
Well, and it's just amazing because you can walk into someone's bar with a drink in your hand, sit down, never pay for anything, work on the drink that you were already drinking.
From the Royal Crown or whatever.
Such a different like conception compared to bars up here. But the bartender at the Circle Bar was shaking cocktails using two different sizes of plastic cups.
Of plastic cups. Dude, that's
Cajun
great.
Cajun Crystal. And I mean, I saw the guy do it, like, in a hotel room, you know? Do the whole old putting two wine glasses together and moving shit back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, this is how bar tools were invented. Like,
yeah. I don't know. It's like we were already doing this with very rugged pieces
the strainer,
of equipment.
The strainer
Let's make
came,
them nice.
The strainer came out of a sugar sifter.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, a cocktail shaking.
Thank you, Mr. Hawthorne.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, like, you work with what you have, and the thing about cocktails is, like, again, as Dave Wonder just pointed out, they're quick, they're fast, they're dirty.
Yeah.
America was a nation of drinkers, still a nation of drinkers.
Right.
And the idea was that you could whip this shit up anywhere. It wasn't like a punch service where you needed some huge bowl, hours to prepare your oleosaccharum.
You didn't need to, like, muddle your lemon peels with sugar cubes. And
the idea about cocktails was you could do them on the fly.
Totally.
Anywhere, under any circumstances.
Totally.
Give a good cocktail bartender or anyone who knows about this. I mean, we can MacGyver this shit up.
I like that.
Definitely. So working in bars like the bars down in Raleigh, like, it's a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Like, you're just there and you're like, this is...
Well, you know, another thing is, like on that subject of, like, being able to make cocktails in any situation, anywhere you are, that's the true test of a good bartender, I think, yep. You know? And the fact that you guys, I mean, we already know that you and Brad Farron are both very good bartenders, some of the best in the industry. Like, going down there and actually proving that theory, not just proving it, but, like, showcasing that theory is a great service for the entire industry and for these up and comers that
sure hell yeah. And I mean, that's,
you know, like there's a lot of like young bartenders that if they don't have Cold Draft or if they don't have like Naraha shakers, they're lost, you know.
And you know, we just don't need it. And the thing is, like, again, information I think should be free.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of proprietary bar information or proprietary recipes. I think that's not how drinks went on.
Yeah.
You know, the Manhattan and the Martini, they were collaborative drinks that were created over the course of 20, 30 years. Like, you look at O.H. Byron's original, like, Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the Manhattans we work with today that sort of became the consensus Manhattan. Miles apart. And what happened was everyone just stole the recipe from one another and then worked it out. And then slowly through a process of natural selection, we ended up with these great cocktails.
It's such an it's an opposing style of, like, what happened back in the day.
Sure.
So you have like Jerry Thomas writing the 1862 Bon Vivant's Companion. People were trying to get that information out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So badly. Like, it was like they couldn't get it out fast enough.
Sure. And that, you know,
and nowadays it's so secretive. It's like, come on, man.
And we learned this lesson already, because the great secondary cocktail, well, the first great cocktail renaissance of the 20th century was the Tiki movement.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if Jeff Barry hadn't come around, like, there would be no Tiki revival, just because we didn't have any goddamn recipes, because everything was in code and in secret. Like, they were so secretive about everything that an entire series of decades of amazing drinks nearly died out.
Yeah.
If it weren't for the efforts of a handful of incredibly dedicated, like, researchers who were into that. With this, it's like, listen, we'll go work in any city, and I will always share what you need to know, how to make a syrup, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are no secrets in the ideas. If we leave, like, here's a spec sheet. If this is good, here's the honey syrup. Here's how you whip it up. You can make this for your customers. Like, you're not going to do it all the time. 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to want a PBR and shot of Jim Beam, which is A-okay because I love a fucking Boilermaker. But, yeah, share and share alike.
You know what, Jack? Let's attack on another 15 to this show. We're going to take a quick break. The amazing Nick Jarrett and I will be back in about a minute, and we're going to continue talking. We're back with Nick Jarrett. Table 42 just got up and left.
Bye-bye, Table 42.
Bye, Table 42. Stick around in the future. Brad Farron and I will have a show coming up called Table 42.
Bravo.
Which is, for our listeners that haven't been to Roberta's, it's the table that's right outside. It's a two-top table right outside of the window of the studio, where we'll be commenting on people's dates.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
We'll have a little panel going, and Nick Jarrett will definitely be welcome to come and sit in and join in on the commentary.
You know, we've never done that as bartenders.
Well, you know what?
See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. I don't see anything that goes on in any of my bars ever. Never.
Oh, wait. I mean, David Bowie and Brad Fellon? We're going to use some pen names for this.
Oh, absolutely.
I just gave myself David Bowie. Nice. It rhymes with Damon Bolte.
And hey, but... man, you could go worse. You could go worse.
Well, now I feel like a complete asshole. So we got Nick Jarrett on the show, and we've been talking a lot about cocktails and multiple city bartending and, yeah, just general revelry on the entire industry. Nick, okay, let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
I want to start talking about some cocktails now.
Okay.
I mean, we were definitely talking about, like, the classics and their interpretations, and, I remember, like, one of the first times I met you, you came to my bar at Prime Meats in Carroll Gardens.
Totally.
And I met you through Frank Cisneros, who was bartending there at the time.
Right.
Who is now at Dram. He just opened up his own bar with some other people. The Drink.
My roommate as well. Yeah.
And he's your roommate. Totally. There was two of the first cocktails that you introduced me to, which I've since taken and ran with. One of them being the Revion.
Oh, yeah. Delicious cocktail.
Can you tell us what's in that one?
Yeah, sure. That's one of Chuck Taggart's out of New Orleans. One of the early and super influential bloggers in the movement. And that is a little bit of apple brandy, some pear eau de vie, touch of allspice liqueur, a bit of aromatic bitters. Whiskey barrel works fine, and then a little bit of vermouth, either Carpano or Puni Mess, typically.
And then you snap a cinnamon stick?
A little bit of cinnamon on top.
Yep.
Send it off. It's a beautiful stirred... I mean, it is Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Thanksgiving in a glass.
Totally.
It's fucking delicious.
The other one, which is one that... Oh my God, I remember at the time, actually, a guest of the show, Adam Kolesar.
Yeah, Adam was with us.
He was there that night when you turned us on to the Trinidad
Especial. Sure. Brilliant little cocktail.
Which involves an entire, like, an ounce of Angostura bitters.
You know, honestly, I bumped it up to an ounce and a half in the ones I serve now.
You would.
Of course.
You totally would. What's really funny about that, too, is I kind of came up with a variation on that using an entire bottle of Underberg. I think I'm probably the only person in existence that's done three different cocktails using an entire bottle of Underberg with each one of them.
Hey, it comes pre-measured.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's like you don't even need a jigger. so the let's go back again on that. Like, You bumped it up to an ounce and a half of Angostura. For our listeners, sorry, the Trinidad Especial is typically...
An ounce of Angostura, an ounce of orgeat, which is almond syrup, 3/4 ounce of citrus. I mean, there are two competing recipes. The original is lime, and then a little 1/4 ounce of pisco. And then one of the newer ones that's New York-based is 3/4 ounces of lemon, and then 1/4 ounce of bonded rye.
That's Giuseppe's recipe?
That is Giuseppe's.
It's called the Trinidad Sour.
Trinidad Sour. And then the Trinidad Especial, I always blank on the guy's name who came up with it, but it was an Angostura competition winner.
From the mid-20th century, right?
I believe so. I believe so in Germany. I think it's a German cocktail.
That's so weird. It's so weird that, like, all those different ingredients... Like, pisco? 1/4 ounce? Come on.
It's insane. It's insane. And it works.
But it totally works. And it's a really great way to drink an ounce of Angostura bitters. Or an ounce and a half get it from Nick Jarrett.
It's certainly more economical than drinking, like, I don't know, how many old fashions would that be?
That Jesus. 70?
It would put a man down.
Yeah. What's funny about that drink, when you turned us on to that, we were pretty much halfway through the Angostura bitters drought.
Of course.
Do you remember that? Okay,
I certainly do.
So the Angostura bitters company had halted production due to many rumored reasons.
Yeah, there was a bottling mess up. I think they switched bottle producers, and then there was they switched, I think, importers into the U.S.
Right.
I mean, it was much exaggerated, because the fact of the matter is Angostura is a beautiful product, because you can walk into any grocery store in the country
Yeah.
And any Safeway, any Gennardi's, whatever part of the country you're in, just go to your grocery store. Angostura Bitters is everywhere.
Angostura Bitters was the first alcohol that I ever drank.
I think I had some of my dad's scotch from Liquor Cabinet before that, and I know I had some of my uncle's beers long before that, but Angostura was the first liquor that I bought when I was not of age.
I stole it.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, I
shoplifted it from my local...
Five-finger discount.
Yep, totally. I remember I grew up in a very small town in Oklahoma, and I went to the local grocery store with my mom and went to the beverage aisle.
Sure.
And it was like kind of essentially a dry county. Bible Belt, like there was no alcohol to be sold in a grocery store or a convenience store or anything.
Right.
But they did have, I was looking around for some reason. I was like 10 years old or whatever, trying to find some alcohol.
Why not?
Jesus Christ. It's a wonder I got into this industry.
Early starter. I like it.
But I was looking around and I saw that little bottle with the terrible, like, ill-fitting label, and I was looking around, and I was like, oh, shit, this has a lot of alcohol in it, and I was a little hellion at the time, so
sure.
I put it in my pocket, got home, went around the tool shed, took the cap off, that yellow cap off, and I was like, what the hell is this stupid thing
that is keeping me from consuming this delicious alcohol?
This Dasher top, which I had no idea what it was called at the time.
I believe it's technically
that's 20 years ago.
Orifice reducer.
Oh, that's Don Lee all the way. Orifice reducer.
Orifice reducer.
But so I took out my my case. It was either a case or a Swiss Army knife. Popped the top off. Immediately went to chugging it. That was my first shot of Angostura. And my last shot of Angostura was with you at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. This is why.
No, it's been that long?
Yeah.
Damon, what's going on here?
It might have been last year at South by. Oh, you know what? Actually, it was last year. Okay, sorry. I was at a bar called Shangri-La, or Shangri-La's, and that's the same night that Bill Murray served me a shot of tequila.
Awesome.
He was with the RZA and GZA. They were in a parking lot across the street doing a show. Anyway, okay, we're trying.
I'd like to put it out right now that Bill Murray, the RZA, and the GZA are always welcome to guest bartend at any bar I work at.
I'm gonna put that out there as well.
Yeah, anytime.
I'm gonna go above the executive level.
Oh, no, say, no. Like, this is the, like, I'm going to take the highest authority on this. Like, there isn't a question. Like,
dude, Bill Murray was like, I have pictures I'll show you later. He jumped behind the bar at this place. It's kind of like a giant dive bar with a huge backyard. And he started taking orders from people.
Awesome.
And anything that anyone ordered, didn't matter what, Lone Star, a whiskey sour, whatever it was. Shot of tequila is what they got.
Bartender's choice, man.
Bartender's choice.
It's Bill Murray.
You can order whatever you want.
Bill Murray is right.
Yeah. I don't care if you don't like tequila.
You might
think that's what you're getting.
You might think you want something else, but you were probably mistaken, and tequila was the right thing to drink that night.
Exactly.
Because Bill motherfucking Murray served it to you.
Bill motherfucking Murray.
That is the best drink. Like, that was the right drink for the evening. It was whatever Bill Murray was pouring.
I feel like we're going to get trailed off a lot more, and I know we will. We need to start getting to the point where we wrap up a little bit, unless we want to go for an hour show.
I don't know. Has that ever happened before?
It hasn't yet in the speakeasy history. Jack?
Whoa.
What do you think? He says whatever.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
We're doing it.
Huh? All
right. So, okay. The whole point of that trailing off was the shot of
Angostura.
Of Angostura. So, at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, not this last one, but the one before.
Yeah, the preview.
Right, the preview weekend.
Sure.
It was at the gala at the New York Public Library.
I was working the Michter's table.
You were
at that
doing
one.
The Michter's table, and it's kind of like one of those things. It's a little bit more hardcore than the Fernet Branca shot. The Fernet Branca shot it's been dubbed like kind of like
the bartender's
yeah, handshake
totally.
Or whatever, and you know, and it's true. It's very true,
without
actually.
A doubt.
But then we go into shots of Angostura.
Which are lovely. And the best thing about shots of Angostura are, if you're at an event and you have a bottle of Angostura, and this is a tip, a gift from me to you. The best flask in the world is a bottle of Angostura that you've emptied by pouring shots from it. And then fill that up with whatever you have on hand. Don't wash it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, well.
Just take that bottle of Angostura that you just emptied pouring shots, I mean hospitality for your friends, fill that up with something and go on the go, because a bottle of Angostura travels well. And you know what? Pink anything.
Seasoned.
Pink anything.
Pink anything. Totally.
It's delicious.
Yeah, you know what? Pink rum? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Pink whiskey? Pink gin? Pink
anything.
Pisco? Tequila.
For our listeners, can you tell them? I guess they've probably picked up what that is.
The pink gin is a classic. It's a very simple drink. It's gin in Angostura.
Exactly. It's like gin in it.
Yep, gin in it.
Which is short for Italian bitter, or Italian vermouth.
One of those, and I think that was one of the ones that came about in the British sort of empire period. I'm pretty sure that was one of the desert drinks. In the British
empire. Get your quinine.
There were places where there was not ice available very well. And, so you had to sort of be creative on the fly. The gin in it was one, I think, North Africa, where they just mixed room temperature gin and room temperature Italian vermouth. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pink gin was another one. You just liberally coat a glass with Angostura, pour your gin in. It can be 95 degrees. It works. It works.
Totally. You know what? Let's come back after a quick break. I want to thank my producer, Jack Inslee, for being so gracious to...
Jack, you're the man.
Let us take so many breaks and run an hour. This is the first hour show, and I kind of assumed that this was going to happen with Nick Jarrett, who we'll be talking to when we get back from this break.
Cool, cool.
Thanks so much. Right. And we're back.
And we're back.
My guest today is Nick Jarrett. We've been talking about all kinds of things, actually. We were just talking about having shots of tequila served by Bill Murray down in Austin, Texas at South by Southwest last year. And he brought up an interesting point that whatever the bartender's serving at that point, whatever the bartender's choice is, that's the best thing you can be drinking.
It's always the right choice. Trust your bartender. If you're in a dive bar, trust your bartender. If you're in a cocktail bar, trust your bartender.
Yeah. I'm always going to trust Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, like, under any circumstances. Yeah. Like, what would Bill do?
And you just said when we were on the break, it might have been, like, Montezuma.
Or tortilla. Or tortilla. It was probably made with fine imported tequilas and other liqueurs. But... Yeah.
But it probably tasted like
Tobla.
Minero or Tobla.
Oh, yeah.
Like Mezcal. It tasted like the true nectar.
I mean, especially because by that point, I presume it was fairly late in the evening and everyone had, you know.
It was pretty late. Yeah. It was pretty late. And, you know, it's South by Southwest, so people have been going all day. Nick, I want to... We have about 10 minutes left on this show. I want to talk more about... some of the stuff that's coming up. I actually want to go back to the green bar that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So can you give our listeners a little bit more information on this?
Well, all right. I'll give you the quick rundown. Basically, for years, I've been fascinated by the history of the El Dorado Bar in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the El Dorado, when you had the gold rush,
it was basically a tent bar.
The population in California, parts of Nevada, just blew up. You had these boom towns rise overnight.
Carson City, totally.
And there are Culver City, too, I think,
Culver
and a few
City,
others.
Totally.
Would just blow up. Like, you'd have nothing there, and then a month later, there'd be a metropolis with 150,000 people, 200,000 people. And entrepreneurial bartenders moved in because, I mean, you go to these towns, you set up a bar, people aren't paying you with cash. They're paying you with nuggets of gold.
Gold. That's probably, it's assumed that that's how Jerry Thomas...
got his cash to kick off in New York.
Well, that, but also that's assumed how he got all of his. For our listeners that aren't necessarily familiar with Jerry Thomas, he was again he was the author of the first cocktail book, but he was also rumored to travel around with about $1,800 worth of gold
diamonds,
tools,
gold bar tools, diamond cluster sticks. Like you would go to San Francisco like during the gold rush, and I mean you could set up a business, and then within days you have these people who are illiterate. Some of whom are ill-educated, others of whom are very intelligent, but they are paying you for things with ounces of gold.
Just chunks, just like...
Like deflation.
Just balling out before the term was even invented.
It didn't even matter. It's like, listen, here's... Just take this. Here's an ounce. You'd have scales in bars, and El Dorado was supposed to be one of the fanciest Templars. I mean, all-woman orchestra. Mm-hmm. Orchestra pit. Like, chandeliers hung up from the tents, like grand pianos, burned down a number of times, I believe.
Oh, the entire towns would burn down.
Every couple of months. But it didn't matter because it was all plywood and canvas anyway. I mean, not plywood, but, you know, just wood.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Brad about this idea, and I've been like, I want to open a tent bar in a boom town.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want to see what that's like. And I'm like, well, you know, Burning Man. And we just look at each other, and I'm like, all right, we are going to open a tent bar in Burning Man.
Excellent.
And we're going to serve cocktails. We're going to go into the desert where there's no one. And then overnight, there's going to be, I mean, how big is it now? It's
35.
Yeah, I mean it's
40,000 people.
I think it's even more than that at this point.
Really?
Yeah, it's getting huge. So just overnight, like tens of thousands of people are there, and you know they're thirsty.
Yeah, well.
And as a bartender, I hate to think of people being thirsty.
That's very kind of you, Nick Jarrett.
So we're opening this up, and we just got a grant for some money from Tales of the Cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Burning Man, of course, you have to, it's leave no trace. It's zero impact. You're out in the middle of the playa and, you know, you're trying not to fuck the environment up. It's a beautiful desert. So, we're building out a flat pack sort of portable green bar. And, in the spirit of the El Dorado, moving into a boomtown, running it through. And this is what we're traveling around the country raising money for.
Absolutely.
Well,
it's a really cool idea, and it's time for that kind of thing to happen.
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, as far as like the evolution, the education, and the process of bringing something like that to,
well, I'm sure you've seen the new reprint of The Flowing Bowl.
Oh, Cocktail it's painter. My new favorite. Like, I mean, by William Schmidt, the only William.
Yeah, Billy the only Billy.
It's one of my.
It's a blast. I mean,
I always thought that Charles
H.
Baker's Gentleman's Companion or like.
I mean, The Gentleman's Companion will always have a special place in my heart because
especially the South American.
Chaz Baker was a writer.
Yeah,
but
William William Schmidt's book, The Flowing Bowl.
Sure,
it's probably my new favorite cocktail.
Oh, I mean,
book.
The man was brilliant, and there was actually the moral of the story was that at the beginning of the introduction, which Dave Wondrich wrote, he's
a
like,
beautiful.
You know, he talks about before it was. The cocktail movement, used to 10 years ago consist of wouldn't it be nice? Like, wouldn't it be nice if I could go somewhere and get a good Jack Rose? Wouldn't it be nice if the bartender knew how to bitter and stir my Manhattan? And
Jack, we're going to have to use Wouldn't It Be Nice by the Beach Boys as our outro song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he says that now, 10 years in, it's changed from wouldn't it be nice to, and I love it, in italics, yay even unto Idaho.
Yeah.
It's now the bar cry of this, like, we're... Everyone has been taking cocktails everywhere, out into the goddamn desert. Like, there are whole swaths of the population that have never had a decent cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Never. I mean, like, I presume for our listeners, like, think of how many people there are out there who have never had a good old-fashioned. Never had a decent whiskey sour.
Exactly.
I mean, it's mind-boggling just because these people are
to
drinkers.
To us, but I mean...
Not even people. Like, what proportion of drinkers have never had a good cocktail?
And this is a drinking country, and it's a drinking world.
It's a drinking world. I mean, alcohol's been around from,
And it's actually the foundation for... Sorry, it's the foundation for the United States. It's the foundation
William
for
Faulkner,
a lot of...
I believe civilization begins with distillation.
Well, that, but I mean, like, also, like... The taxing of alcohol.
Absolutely.
That was the first tax to go into effect.
Sure. Whiskey Rebellion. I mean,
Whiskey Rebellion.
The whole federal government had to change. Was it? Articles of Confederation switching to the Constitution. Like,
But yeah, so where were we?
where were we?
Yay, even unto Burning Man.
Like, even the idea. Burning Man. Nice. What are some of your ideas as far as like the design, as far as the initiation? What are like some of your, I mean, you were talking about a gray water system.
Sure. I mean, we're going to have to be obviously very conservative with water because right. You're in the middle of a desert.
Mm-hmm. But so typically at those events, you're required to bring like 10 gallons.
Absolutely.
You know, for each person.
Well, but we're operating a bar, so we're going to need substantially more than 10 gallons. Right. And whatever reclamation like and purification we can do, we discussed a couple of ideas, and we just met up with John Yu, who's going to be handling some of our design and groundwork on this down in Raleigh the past couple of days.
Cool.
But, like, yeah, water reclamation projects, composting, organic produce, some interesting stuff with Stirling engines and Dean Kamen's like water purification systems that run off of gases from decomposing vegetable matter.
Cool.
There's a ton of stuff we can work with. And we're working that in to just build a rugged bar. And basically, this will be bartending under fire. I cannot imagine a more difficult set of environmental circumstances to coming up with cocktails than doing it in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the summer, surrounded by throngs of people.
And
none of whom
sandstorms
are...
Sandstorms, too.
Sandstorms, dust everywhere. Like, I mean, no electricity unless we bring a generator. And we're thinking we might not run with electricity.
You know what?
We might set up ice boxes.
You know what?
Do it old style.
Yeah. Don't do it.
So it's also you know, A, it would be awesome to work in a tent bar and build out an El Dorado style tent bar. And B, like, we're bartenders. We love challenges. We're
exactly.
badasses.
Exactly.
We fuck shit up.
You're a five bottle badass.
So
I think this is the most cursing we've done on the show to date.
Oh, well.
Jack's giving me a quick nod.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I
appreciate that.
We're again bartenders, so you
know, exactly. We have to be a little salty.
Absolutely, people like salt.
Well, and you're going to like a lot of it when you're in the desert.
yeah, well, there will be a good deal of it in the desert.
Now, okay, before we sign off, you brought something along with you.
I did.
Wanted to try out.
Shit. Well, this is delicious stuff. If we can get it open, I brought along a little bit of Amontillado because you know sherry is always the right choice.
That's true.
This is a little Del Duque 30-year.
30-year. Nice.
It's a little extra aged.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have any glassware in the studio. We didn't think of...
Of course we have glassware.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Okay. Pouring it into the glass.
Oh, yeah. Take a little pull of that.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like the producer here? And
it's Gonzalez Bias, a beautiful sherry house. They do a series of... sort of extra old bodega reserves. And the Del Duque is really one of my all-time favorite wines. God. Like wine. That is one that might be my favorite wine.
Yeah, it's got that it's got such high acidity to it. It has the raisinated quality, yeah. But it's like it's super like light and acidic.
Well, it reminds me of mezcal because mezcal does that whole acidity thing too.
Exactly.
And this is you know, 30 exactly. years in Jerez.
Awesome. Can you I just want to touch real quick before we sign off, too. Nick Jarrett has some of the best bartender tattoos I've seen in quite some time.
Well, thank you very much, man. I mean,
One of my favorites that I'm intensely jealous of is the sword pick with the cherry.
The sword pick with the cherry is a great one. Now, that was all Tanya Guffey's idea. Mm-hmm. Tanya, good friend of mine, works over at Flatiron and Lonnie Kai as well as at Dram. We share a number of bar tattoos, but the sword pick with the cherry was for the survivors of my last night in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And for my last night in Philadelphia at the Franklin, what I did was, you know, it was basically a 10-year anniversary of being in Philadelphia. It was the last day I was going to be working in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
My last day at the Franklin, which was a baller bar, and pretty much about 10 years of dispensing drinks in one form or another. So I just brought down a crew of rock star bartenders.
Awesome.
We had about 12 people down, threw them all behind the bar at the Franklin, had an insane night. I remember pieces of it. And what happened was, for the last standing, there were tattoos the next morning. So that is the sword pick with a cherry through it.
It's perfect, man. One more thing I want to talk about before we sign off. You are going to be working tonight at Flatiron Lounge.
Yeah.
So, for our listeners, if anyone's... willing to have one of the greatest cocktails of their entire life. You might want to go out to Flatiron Lounge tonight.
At one of the greatest bars of all time. I mean, what a privilege to work there.
Absolutely. Say, like, Julie Reiner is a great lady.
And Flatiron, going on 8 years now.
Yeah.
Like, one the aside from Milk and Honey, I mean, it was really sort of the second, like, major, it was the second real cocktail bar to open up.
Absolutely.
And no door policy. Like, that place does crazy volume, and the drinks are baller. Everyone worked there. Half of the bartenders in New York started off as bar backs.
Totally. You know, next week on the show, we're going to have, I mean, this is the first hour show we've done. Which is amazing. I'm very excited about that. We're going to have Nick Jarrett back on the show with the cabinet of the USBG New York. That's the United States Bartenders Guild.
One of my other positions in life. Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna do some chatting about the guild. We'll
a little talk solidarity, about some healthcare, like state of the industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Great services they're doing for all the industry, and that'll be very interesting. We'll have Jason Luttrell on. You know, we'll do it upright. If we run an hour again, I'm going to have to talk to Jack.
About some scheduling, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, he's probably going to...
He might kill you.
He might kill me.
He might kill you.
You know, for every drink that comes back here, there's an easy 15 minutes coming your way.
There we go. See? All right.
Thanks, Jack. Two firsts. One, the hour show. Two, Jack chiming in.
Hell yes. There we go.
Nice. Next time he's going to have to come in and sit in with us.
Absolutely.
So, so thanks a lot, Nick Jarrett.
David, absolutely my pleasure, man. It's been a blast.
It's been mine. My pleasure all along. Thanks for sharing your knowledge. We would love to have you back sometime besides the next week show with the USBG. And I'm sure when we do the Table 42 show that you'll...
I definitely won't be here. I will not be here.
None of us will.
None of us
will. But someone will be here.
Someone will be here.
Like, four of us will probably be here.
They will be... Can we get this one-way mirror?
I think... We'll have to ask Jack about it. But, I'm pretty sure we can work something out.
Yeah, okay.
So go out and see Nick Jarrett tonight.
Come visit.
At Flatiron Lounge. And tune in next week for the Speakeasy. I've been your host, Damon Balti. Jack Inslee is my producer. And happy Texas Independence Day, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house, where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful. There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1-liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Wine Impresarios Aaron Fitzpatrick and Brian DeMarco as they dish out on the latest industry news with winemakers and tastemakers on Heritage Radio Network's revamped wine show, Unfiltered. Erin Fitzpatrick, one of the first hosts on HRN with her program At the Root of It, amps up the volume and unfiltered content with co-host Brian DeMarco in this 2011 Redux. True to the original format, Erin and Brian will keep you abreast of current happenings and break down the news and global events, distilling complex into anecdotal stories that inspire. From media and political events to hailstorms in Argentina, no topic is out of bounds. Tune in every week to hear them chat up the industry's biggest personalities and host on-air tastings with visiting vintners and the country's hottest sommeliers. Whether you're an expert or an enthusiast, Unfiltered demystifies wine and lets you know what it really takes to get a bottle from the vineyard to your neighborhood wine shop. Unfiltered broadcasts live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.